Muhammad Rasulullah by Abul Hasan Ali Nadwi. Chapter 25, Wives and Children of the Prophet. The first among the wives of the Prophet was Khadija bin Khuwailid. The Prophet's marriage with Khadija took place before beginning of revelation, when he was 25 and she was 40 years old. Being deeply devoted to the Prophet of God, she supported him during the most difficult period of his life, shared his adversities and troubles with a good grace, and helped him with her wealth and her kind words. She died 3 years before the Prophet migrated to Medina. She had borne the Prophet all his children except Ibrahim. The Prophet always held her in high esteem and very often praised her. There was never an occasion that he would kill a sheep and cut it into pieces and not send some to Khadija's friends. After the death of Khadija, the Prophet married Sauda bint Zama'a. He was then united in wedlock with Aisha, whom he adored and loved dearly. There has been no woman like her in the whole history of Islam who so deeply understood the teachings of Islam and convincingly explained the juristical issues. Even the most eminent and learned companions of the Prophet consulted her in intricate legal issues. Hafsa, the daughter of Omar ibn al-Khattab, was the next to join the nuptial tie with the Holy Prophet. Thereafter, he married Zainab, who died 2 months after her marriage to the Prophet. Umm Salama was then wedded to the Prophet, and she was last of his wives to leave this fleeting world. After her, the Prophet contracted matrimony with Zainab bin Jahsh, the daughter of his aunt Umayma. Thereafter, Juwayriya, belonging to the tribe of Al-Mustalik, and Umm Habiba bint Abu Sufyan were in succession taken as wives by the Prophet. His next wife was Safiya, the daughter of the chief of Banu Nadar. Her father, Huwayya, tracked his descent to Harun ibn Ibrahim ibn Imran, the brother of Prophet Moses. The honor of being the last spouse of the Prophet went to Maymuna, from the tribe of Hilal. There is no difference of opinion that 9 of the Prophet's wives survived him. Khadija and Zainab last had died during his lifetime. All of them except Aisha were widows. The Prophet of God, widows before marriage. The Prophet of God also had 2 bondsmen who were alive when he died. One of them was Maria the Copt, the daughter of Shamun, who was presented to him by Muqaqis, the ruler of Egypt. She bore a son, Ibrahim, to the Prophet. The other was Raihana bint Zaid, who belonged to the tribe of An-Nadir. She was set free on her profession of Islam, and thereafter the Prophet took her in marriage. All of the wives of the Prophet being the mothers of the believers, Ummahatihil Mu'mineen, to the Muslims, they were forbidden to remarry anyone after the death of the Prophet. This was in keeping with the honor and respect due to the Prophets of God, as well as the loving regard every Muslim had for the Messenger of God. This, the right of God for the Muslims was, quote, "And it is not for you to cause annoyance to the Prophet, nor that you should ever marry his wives after him. That is Allah's sight, would be an enormity." The marriages of the Prophet. Up to his 25th year, the Prophet lived alone, enjoying single blessedness. In the flower of his youth, he possessed all the qualities of life's morning march. He was good-natured, sound of mind and body, and a specimen of Arab manliness. His well-molded, strongly built frame, courage, generosity, skill in horsemanship, and unpretentiousness, the qualities esteemed by the Arabs, came to the wild, barren desert where he had spent his childhood. All of these physical and mental gifts are, according to psychologists and scholars of ethics, no less important in molding the character of a man. The youthful days of the Prophet before beginning of revelation were free from every blemish. Neither his worst enemies during his lifetime nor the mudslinging critics of the later times have ever been able to find the slightest fault with his critical period in his life. His veracity, chastity, innocence, and pureness of heart were proverbial, for he never indulged in anything unbecoming of a true-souled human being or a youth like him. He married Khadija at the age of 25. She was a widow who had married twice before and also had children from earlier husbands. As most of the authorities agree, she was 15 years older than the Prophet. His next marriage was contracted with Sauda when he had already crossed his 50th year. She had migrated to Abyssinia with her husband who had died in Abyssinia. The Prophet never married any virgin except Aisha. All of his marriages were directed by consideration of kindliness, of cementing the bonds of friendship with alien tribes, setting examples of virtuous behavior for the Muslims, achieving some public good, or forestalling some dangers to the nascent community of Islam. In the tribal society of Arabia, family matrimonial relationships had special significance unknown to any other part of the world. Ties of blood lent security, importance, and dignity in the tribal society of Arabia. The marriages of the Prophet were thus invariably conducive to the dissemination of the message of Islam among the pagan tribes, and thus they were a means of strengthening the idealistic society of Medina to the extent that the ties of blood created through marriages were helpful in putting a check to unnecessary bloodshed, the perpetual sport of the nomads, and both of these were absolutely necessary for the survival of Islamic society. Also, neither the Prophet nor his wives ever led a life of ease or luxury, as one is bound to think of polygamous marriages. His life was the life of exemplary continence and frugality, self-denial and temperance, a life so uniquely pure and chaste that even the greatest Puritan of any time in any history of mankind cannot be compared with him. We shall cite some examples of his simple, frugal life while describing the character of the Prophet and manners, but the testimony of God should be sufficient to convey to every honest man about the absence of ease and comfort in the married life of the Holy Prophet. Quote, O Prophet, say unto your wives, if you desire the world's life and its adornments, come, I will content you and I will release you a fair release. But if you desire Allah and His Messenger and abode of the hereafter, then Allah has prepared for the good amongst you an immense reward. The greatest objective which the Prophet had set forth before his wives, as well as his own immaculate and upright disposition, had guided all of them to give but one answer to the question posed by God. None of them had the least hesitation in making her choice in favor of God and His Messenger and the ultimate salvation. The Prophet recited the above verses before Aisha and said, Do not make haste in giving your reply and consult your parents. She replied, What is there to consult my parents? I want God and His Messenger and the abode of the hereafter. She relates that all the wives of the Prophet gave a similar answer. The Prophet's polygamous bonds of matrimony and the demands they entailed never caused him to neglect, even for the shortest period of time, either the greatest responsibility of his mission or the affairs of the Muslims or even his exacting religious and spiritual pursuits. They rather helped him to devote himself to his mission with a reward and a renewed vigor and enthusiasm. The wives of the Prophet always lent him a helping hand in dissemination of his message and expounding the teachings of Islam to his followers. They accompanied him in his expeditions and nursed the sick and the wounded. In fact, about one third of the teachings of Islam in regards to social, marital, and household responsibilities of the Muslims have come to be known through the Prophet's wives, who enlightened and guided the Muslims about family life and behavior of the Prophet with the inmates of his house. The greatest service rendered to Islam by the wives of the Prophet is best illustrated by Aisha, about whom it has been clearly said by eminent scholars of the science of traditions written in significant books, quote, Among the companions of the Prophet, well versed in jurisprudence, she was the most prominent, for even the leading jury consultants referred intricate questions of law to Aisha for advice. Ibn Dhuayb says that Aisha knew more about law than most of the companions who used to make inquiries from her. Abu Musa says that if any companion of the Prophet amongst us had any difficulty in finding out the real purpose of any tradition, that is the saying of the Prophet, he used to inquire it from Aisha. She invariably knew about it. Hassan says that he found nobody more deeply well-versed than Aisha in the Quran, in the injunctions about things permitted and forbidden, or mandatory and obligatory poetry, Arabian history, or genealogy, unquote. The moral virtues of the Prophet's wives were indescribable. Their clemency and benignity, grace and compassion, generosity and nobility, and open-hearted magnanimity are demonstrated by the incidents handed down by Hisham on the authority of his father. He relates that once Khalif Muawiyah sent 100,000 dirhams to Aisha, and by God, the month was not over when she had given away all of it to the poor and the needy. Thereupon, a bondsman said to her, "It would have been better if you had bought some meat for a dirham." Aisha replied, "Why didn't you tell me earlier?" It was related that Aisha was then fasting. The question relating to the polygamous marriages allowed by Islam has long been preying on the minds of Orientalists and Western writers. Their inquiry springs from their desire to hem in the matrimonial laws of Islam and the time-honored practice of Arab countries within their own Western concepts and usages. They are often too anxious to transpose their own standards, the product of peculiar circumstances in a peculiar type of society lacking the sanction of divine authority, into a system growing out of innate disposition and circumstances of Arabian society that carries not only social and moral benefits but also rests on the laws of God. Truly speaking, it is the failing of the Western ways of thought and its protagonists that they present the Western concept of morality as the standard of human behavior and then ruthlessly proceed to set a value on everything that goes contrary to it. What they actually do is to raise a whimsical issue and then go ahead to find an answer to the problem. This is all due to their self-conceitedness and chauvinistic approbation of everything originating in the West. A Western biographer of the Prophet has been bold enough to point out this common weakness of the Western thought leaders who try to bring in a verdict on the marriages of the Prophet. Quote, "Muhammad's married life must not be looked upon from a Western point of view or from that set by Christian conventions. These men and women were not Western and they were not Christians. They were living in a period of time in a country where the only known ethical standards were theirs. Even so, there is no reason why the codes of America and Europe should be considered superior to those of the Arabs. The people of the West have many things to give to the people of the East. They have also much to gain from them, and until they can prove that their way of life is on a higher moral standard than anybody else, they should reserve judgment on other creeds and castes and other countries' ideologies." Unquote. The West condemns polygamy as an unmitigated evil and refuses unwittingly to attach any value to it. But the so-called evil is neither unnatural or abnormal, nor its condemnation is based on any universally accepted principle that it would continue to be rejected by the coming generations. The system envisages the role of men and women according to their nature, while its rejection, resting merely upon imaginary and fanciful sculptures, derives support from powerful mass media possessed by the West. With the fast-changing social, economic, and moral pattern of the modern society, the world will, in all probability, ultimately reject the Western values of monogamous marriages. In one of the most challenging and appalling studies of modern times, Alvin Toffler has analyzed the symptoms of terrifying changes emerging in the Western super-industrial societies as a result of its present dehumanizing values. He has even predicted that the sexual attitudes of the West loosen up as property rights become less important because of rising affluence. The social repression of polygamy may come to be regarded as irrational. The children of the Prophet. Khadija, the first wife of the Prophet, gave birth to his son Al-Qasim, after whom the Prophet was called Abul Qasim, that is the father of Qasim. He died in infancy. Thereafter, she bore the Prophet's four daughters, Zainab, Ruqayya, Kalsum, and Fatima. One more son named Abdullah was born to her. Abdullah was surnamed As-Tayyib and Tahir, according to Ibn Qayyim, but there are others who regard the three as three separate sons of the Prophet. All these sons and daughters of the Prophet were born to Khadija. Fatima was held dearest by the Prophet amongst his children. The Prophet of God once said to her, she would be the leader of women in paradise, and Fatima is a part of me, and whoso offends her offends me. After the Prophet's death, she was the first amongst the Prophet's family members to bid farewell to this world. Maria, the Copt, was the mother of Ibrahim, another son of the Prophet. He also died in infancy. In his deep sorrow over the child's death, the Prophet said, the eyes weep and the hearts grieve, but we say nothing that displeases our Lord, and we are grieved over being separated from you, Ibrahim. There was a solar eclipse on the day Ibrahim died. Some of the companions attributed the eclipse to the death of Ibrahim, but the Prophet corrected them in a speech wherein he said, the sun and the moon are two signs of God. They are not eclipsed on account of anyone's death. Zainab was married to Abul As bin Rabi, the nephew of Khadija, and had two children named Ali and a daughter whose name was Umama. Ruqayya, another daughter of the Prophet, was betrothed by Uthman bin Affan, whom she bore a son named Abdullah. Ruqayya died when the Prophet was at Badr, and Uthman was left behind to look after her. Kalsum, the sister of Ruqayya, was then united in marriage with Uthman bin Affan when he came to be known as the possessor of the two lights. Fatima was joined in wedlock with Ali, the son of Abu Talib and a cousin of the Prophet. Their elder son was Hassan, whose name Ali acquired the title Abul Hassan, and younger one was Hussein. Both of them were dearest to the Prophet's heart, and they were praised by him in the following words. These two are my two sweet-smelling blossoms in this world. On another occasion, he said that these two would be leaders of youth in paradise. God blessed Hassan and Hussein with progeny numerous as the stars and caused them to serve Islam and his followers. Great leaders, scholars, and heavenly-minded saints were born amongst those who raised the banner of revolt against every corruption and restored the health of the soul of the Muslims. Ali, Fatima, had two daughters, Zainab and Kalsum. The first was married to her cousin Abdullah bin Jafar, who was regarded as the most generous person in Arabia. Zainab bore two sons, Ali and Aun, to Abdullah. Kalsum was given in marriage to Umar ibn al-Khattab, whom he bore a son named Zayd. All the sons and daughters of the Prophet of God except Fatima died during his lifetime. Fatima yielded her last breath 6 months after the death of the Prophet. Jazakallah khair. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.